Hi everyone and welcome to another episode of the Clinical Radiology Podcast. I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Scher today, a consultant radiologist at the Royal Marsden Hospital, who will be discussing his article on prostate cancer metastases. So, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Scher. Would you be able to start by telling us about yourself and your interest in prostate cancer imaging?
Thanks, Kirtini. So my name's Joshua Scher. I'm an abdominal radiologist based at the Royal Marsden Hospital. My interest is in abdominal imaging, so GI and GU. And so, I mean, my interest in prostate cancer imaging, firstly, you know, it's important to realize that prostate cancer is common. It's the most common tumor type in men. And so it's an important topic. And imaging really central to the investigation, not only at the diagnostic stage for planning biopsies and definitive treatment, but also for evaluating patients with metastatic disease in response to treatment. So it's an important topic, and imaging plays a central role. I guess coupled with that as well, the imaging that we have available for investigating men with metastatic prostate cancer is changing. So CT and bone scan has been the mainstay of our investigative imaging tools, but there are newer imaging techniques such as new PET tracers like PSMA and also whole body MRI.
So I think you've touched upon this already actually in that answer, but what prompted this article in particular at this time?
Well, we'd noticed that patients with metastatic prostate cancer, the sort of typical patterns that we kind of might be aware of, so nodal disease in the pelvis and retroperitoneum and skeletal metastatic disease. In addition to these sort of more typical appearances, we suddenly see more commonly less typical and unusual appearances of metastatic disease. And there might be a number of reasons for this. So, you know, men may be living longer, they're undergoing multiple lines of therapy, and also our imaging techniques are changing. So we have better at detecting sites of metastatic disease. And I guess we wanted to sort of just really raise awareness of what we had observed for people that might be reporting metastatic prostate cancer. And this is, you know, can be important to reduce diagnostic uncertainty and ensure people have access to the correct treatment and management as quickly as possible. And also, I think it's important to realize that another thing that we wanted to highlight in the paper was just looking at the different types of imaging that we can do. So not just CT and bone scan, but whole body MRI and PSMA PET, which are having a sort of increasingly important role to really sort of highlight the strengths and weaknesses of those imaging investigations, and to know, you know, and to have a better idea about when some might be appropriate and some of the pitfalls which can be encountered using certain imaging techniques.
Yeah.
So that was kind of our rationale for wanting to, you know, write the paper and some of the sort of broad messages we were trying to get across.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. And I'm just thinking, before we go into a bit more detail about the more kind of atypical sites that you've covered in the article, particularly thinking about the more junior listeners, it might be quite useful to go over the common sites of spread of prostate cancer, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, of course. So typically when sort of think about the common appearances or sites of metastatic disease, I guess you can split it into common sites and also common appearances. So when we think about common sites, typically this is to lymph nodes, which are usually in the pelvis, although the inguinal station is an atypical site, and to the retroperitoneum. And skeletal metastatic disease is usually to the axial skeleton. Coupled with that is also the sort of common appearances or typical appearances. So metastatic lymph nodes tend to, with prostate cancer, usually enlarged greater than a centimeter. And they tend to have a sort of rounded morphology. And in addition to that, metastases that we see in the skeleton are typically sclerotic in appearances, although, as we've discussed in the paper, that's not always the case.
Yeah.
So just think about nodes and bones, and then enlarged nodes, but well-defined and sclerotic mets.
Great. That's a really nice summary and definitely very useful for myself, and I'm sure to lots of other listeners as well. So just to think about the more atypical sites of spread that you've discussed in the article now, things you've mentioned such as visceral and intracranial metastases or an infiltrative pattern of lymph node spread, for example. You have said that these are quite rare in the article, but I just wanted to ask, why is it important to recognise them, and which ones of these have you come across more commonly?
So I think recognition of visceral metastatic disease is important, you know, mainly, you know, for a start, because it confers prognostic information. So, for example, men with liver metastases will have the worst prognosis, followed by those with lung metastases, followed by bone metastases with or without nodal disease, and the best prognosis is seen with lymph node only disease. So it is important to recognize just from a prognostic standpoint. I think it's also to recognize as it can cause diagnostic uncertainty. So if you see unusual sites of metastatic disease, you might be tempted to think of alternative diagnoses or perhaps not consider prostate cancer as a possible diagnosis. So I think it's just important to be aware that these patterns can occur. You mentioned about the infiltrative lymph node pattern, and that's important to recognize because typically when we see nodes that have this infiltrative pattern, so you tend to see sort of either stranding around the lymph node, or you might actually see them start to infiltrate and soft tissue actually start to grow into the adjacent structures, rather than it just being an enlarged, rounded, discrete node, as it were. These tend to sort of invade and obstruct things. So, for example, the ureter. So often you might see patients who have this infiltrative pattern will then either have or go on to develop hydronephrosis. Similarly, the atypical bony metastatic disease patterns. So patients with lytic bone disease can have a propensity for developing extraosseous soft tissue disease. And so whenever I see any lytic bone disease on a CT, I always sort of narrow the window width and have a very close look for any signs that there might be some extraosseous disease, which can encroach into the spinal canal and result in metastatic cord or cord equina compression. So I think there are important prognostic information you can get by observing these patterns.
Yeah, and I was just going to go back to the second part of the question. Which of these have you come across quite commonly? Or I know they're rare, but amongst these.
Thank you. Yeah, I forgot to answer that bit.
Oh, no problem.
So, I mean, I think, so for example, liver metastases we see not uncommonly. And it seems to be that liver mets and so liver and lung metastases are not that uncommon that we see, although it used to be much rarer that you would see liver metastases. And you know, you can see the whole range of patterns. So they can be cystic, they can be sort of discrete lumps, or they can, you know, have a more infiltrative pattern. And similarly in the lung, you know, we've seen miliary type patterns. They can occasionally be cavitatory, and also you can get sort of a lymphangitis pattern with sort of pleural involvement. So those are probably the more common visceral sites. Rarely things like adrenal, splenic, exceedingly rare in the brain, but we do see them. Usually if you see sort of intracranial disease, it's more likely to be invasion from the calvarium into the dura and meninges rather than a sort of discrete brain parenchymal met. But you know, we do have cases of that.
Yeah.
Another thing that we have seen increasingly common is seeding into the urinary tract. So essentially it'll sort of mimic a TCC in the ureter. So in a patient with metastatic prostate cancer, if you do see a nodule in the ureter, then you should think of metastatic spread of prostate.
Sure. So it's some really useful points actually that you've covered there. As you said at the start, prostate cancer is very common and increasingly so, and I think we all come across it, so to actually be aware of these and to know to look out for them is really helpful. And I actually found the article really useful myself, so I would urge everyone to actually read it, and especially with the corresponding images, it's very, very helpful. So you've already gone through the prognostic implications to kind of bear in mind, but what are the important treatment consequences of recognizing these rarer metastases?
So I think, first of all, it's important just to sort of think about the clinical situation that you're in. So, for example, the implications may be different for someone who has a rising PSA and you're suspecting biochemical recurrence following curative treatment, versus someone who has metastatic disease, but you're not able to actually detect the site of metastatic disease. to someone who has oligometastatic or polymetastatic disease. And, you know, the treatment implications will sort of vary between these different sort of clinical scenarios. I think one thing that's important to highlight, and one area that recognizing and detecting sites of metastatic disease is important, is in the oligometastatic setting. So usually patients who have nodal or bone disease in less than 5 sites, because you can have targeted treatment to these sites, which will improve prognosis and may, you know, postpone or reduce the need for systemic treatment. So I think rather than sort of detecting atypical sites, it's important to sort of detect all sites of metastatic disease, you know, initially. And the treatment implications will vary as to what sort of clinical scenario you are in. There are some particular considerations when it comes to sort of visceral sites of disease, which could be regarded as less typical. So for example, radium therapy is not usually indicated for patients with visceral metastatic disease. So that may exclude someone from undergoing radium therapy. So I think, you know, that it is important, but detection of metastases in general is important as well.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess one thing that came to mind when I was reading the article was that, of course, you've outlined that different modalities are better for detecting different sites of disease. So, for example, PSMA PET for small lymph nodes, MRI for bone or liver lesions, and CT maybe for lung lesions. But I was just thinking it might be quite difficult in reality to access all of these modalities for each patient, especially the more advanced imaging such as PET and MRI. So I wondered, in your opinion, in an ideal world, what would the optimal imaging protocol be? But also, if access was limited, what would you recommend?
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. And, you know, I clearly recognize that it may be more difficult to get access to certain imaging techniques. I guess you kind of have to use what is available to sort of the best of what you can, but also trying to answer the clinical question. So if you're trying to detect small nodal disease, then we know that CT and MRI is not great, that for example, the ADC characteristics of normal and malignant nodes tend to overlap. So it's difficult to use MRI alone for detecting nodal involvement. And that's why PSMA is so much better for smaller nodes. Although up to 10% may also be PSMA negative. So I guess you have to try and tailor your investigations to what you're trying to identify. I think another thing to sort of highlight is, you know, whole body MRI, it is sort of a kind of an emerging test, which is becoming increasingly common, but the hardware and software needed to perform a whole body MRI test, you know, they can be done on sort of standard off-the-shelf scanners from all the main vendors. You know, 1.5 Tesla scanners from all the main vendors can do whole body MRI. You don't need any specific sort of bells and whistles, as it were. Some of the older scanners, they may be difficult because of the number of coils that you can plug in, because you need a whole body coil coverage. And you need full table movement through the scanner, which can be an issue with some of the older scanners. But the sort of newer off-the-shelf 1.5 Tesla scanners can all do whole body MRI. So it may be, you know, capacity issues aside, it may be technically possible to do it. But yeah, it's a difficult one. If ultimately, CT and bone scan is the sort of mainstay of our imaging tools, and those have to be used. And those, you know, we have the most evidence for those, and those ultimately are what we should be using. But just to really be aware of the limitations of these techniques. So, for example, you know, calling progression on CT in bones just because they become sclerotic. You know, it's very difficult to infer activity, bone marrow disease activity on CT alone. In fact, and you can, you know, call something progression when it's not. And similarly with the bone scan, you get an osteoblastic flare phenomenon, which you may interpret as progression. So it's just really to be aware of those sort of pitfalls.
Yeah. As you say, it's just important to be pragmatic with what you do have and using your resources to the best of their kind of capacity, but also even just having the awareness of the limitations of the imaging that you're using are important interpretive kind of considerations. So I was just going to say, that probably brings us to the end of the discussion, but do you have any kind of final thoughts or tips for reporting prostate cancer staging scans, and just any final thoughts in general?
Yeah, thanks. So I guess, yeah, when I am reporting, so I'll stick with CT because that's kind of what is the mainstay really for most radiologists for evaluation of patients with metastatic disease. And I sort of, the way I report it is a bit like the TNM. So first of all, I'll look at the tumor. So look at the prostate itself. You may see that the patient's had a prostatectomy, or you may see brachytherapy or brachytherapy seeds or fiducials within the gland, and just try and look to see whether there's an obvious recurrent mass there. Sometimes it can be difficult to see on CT, but sometimes you might see that actually there's a sort of locally advanced tumor, which has, you know, which is involving the prostate. You can also look, if the gland looks normal in morphology, it can be, you don't see it all the time, but sometimes you might just see an area of focal enhancement in the prostate, and that might be a clue that there's some active disease there. But it's important not to overinterpret that, but I guess the take-home point is you can see local disease relapse on CT in some cases. So once I've had a look at the prostate, then I'll go and have a look at the lymph nodes, and you want to look at all the sort of typical sites of metastatic disease, so pelvis, you know, but not the inguinal stations, and then retroperitoneum, and then have a look at the bones. And I think one thing that can be quite helpful is to change the window width. So you're almost looking at sort of somewhere between a bony and a soft tissue window, and that allows you to see any extraosseous soft tissue that might just be starting to develop. And then you can look for everything else, so any other sites of metastatic disease. Before you do that, though, I should say it's important to look, if you have access to your patient record, have a look at the history. So find out what the patient's PSA is, what lines of treatment they have, and what lines, whether they've had any targeted radiotherapy, for example, to the axial skeleton. And that will make everything, that make interpreting the imaging so much easier if you have the history. It's very difficult to make a sort of correct interpretation without knowing what treatment the patient's had and what treatment they're currently on. I think also for reporters that are just starting to look at reporting prostate cancer staging, I think it's just also to be understand the different sort of biology that's happening. So just understanding what's happening in cases of biochemical recurrence and what the kind of things you're looking for versus patients with hormone sensitive and castration resistant disease, and what the imaging findings may be and what treatment implications they may have. I think that's really important.
Yeah.
So I guess those would be my tips. And then, yeah, final thoughts. Again, just to sort of reiterate, if you see sclerotic bone disease, which is becoming increasingly sclerotic, you know, not to necessarily interpret that as progression. That may be a sign of a treatment response and bone healing. And that we've shown some examples in the paper, but CT alone has quite limited role for assessing activity of bony metastatic disease. And ideally, you need other techniques such as diffusion weighted imaging or PSMA PET to tell you what's actually happening.
Yeah, so thank you for going through all those points. I think actually throughout the whole podcast, we've discussed quite a lot of really useful educational points. And I just want to reiterate to anyone listening that the article itself goes into a lot more detail, especially with the pictures to illustrate the descriptions. So definitely, if you're listening, make sure to read the article in Clinical Radiology. And thank you for your time today, Dr. Scher.
Thanks, Kirtini. Thank you for inviting me to talk today about the paper.
Thank you. Thank you all for listening. Make sure to stay up to date with Clinical Radiology news and updates on our website and Twitter page.